Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and the Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one, which of the following, if any, is true about this coming weekend's Groundhog Day? Is it A, if the groundhog sees his shadow on February 2nd, winter is almost over? Is it B, February 2nd is the midway point between the solstices and the equinoxes? Is it C, Punk Tsunami Phil's predictions have been just over 50% accurate? And D, all of the above statements are true about Groundhog's Day? Or is it E, none of the above statements are true about Groundhog's Day? So, Groundhog's Day, what is true? And question number two, in which decade was the 45 RPM record first released? Was that A, 1930s, B, 1940s, C, 1950s, or D, 1960s? First relief of the 45 RPM. When was that anyway? The answers to these two important questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of January 31st. Well, it was on this very day back in 1964 that the governor of Indiana declared that the song Louie Louie by the Kingsmen was pornographic, and he requested that the state's radio stations not play that song. And by the way, evidence of obscenity was never found in unscrambling the mumbled lyrics Louie Louie, banned today in 64. And it was 15 years ago today, 2010, that more than 80 artists gathered to record the remake of We Are the World. The next day, Janet Jackson laid down her version of Michael Jackson's part. The remake was dedicated to the country of Haiti, and the song premiered at the opening of the Winter Olympics on February the 12th. We Are the World, 2010. Today. Vivaldi's Four Seasons, Spring, introduces our classical music news. It's an article titled, When Music Kills, Seven Tales of Musical Curses and Death Wishes. From eerie coincidences to bizarre psychological effects, here are seven stories of classical music with deathly powers. This is published in BBC Music Magazine by Steve Wright on the 17th of January, 2025. Better known for its beauty and sophistication, classical music is not usually associated with danger. However, over the centuries, certain compositions have been linked to myths, superstitions, and even death. From eerie coincidences to psychological effects, these deadly pieces have gained notoriety in cultural lore. Here are some of the most infamous examples. Number 1. Gloomy Sunday, a.k.a. the Hungarian Suicide Song. Composer, Rezo Ceres. The legend, the melancholic song is alleged to have inspired a wave of suicides in Hungary and beyond. Dubbed the Hungarian Suicide Song, its haunting melody and despair-filled lyrics reportedly pushed listeners to the brink. The reality? While there is no concrete evidence in linking the song to suicides, the legends were certainly sensationalized in the media, amplifying Gloomy Sunday's somewhat eerie reputation. Number 2. The Curse of the Ninth. The legend. Composers like Beethoven, Schubert, Dvorak, and Mahler are said to have died after completing their Ninth Symphony, leading to the belief that a curse haunted this milestone. Mahler famously tried to outwit the curse by calling his Ninth Symphonic work Das Lied von der Erde. However, it seemed that death was alert to the game, and it was all to no avail. Mahler passed away soon after completing his actual Ninth Symphony. The reality? Probably more coincidence rather than reality, but the superstition of the Curse of the Ninth has perpetuated the myth that no composer can write beyond 9 symphonies without tempting fate. Number 3. Allegri's Forbidden Music. The legend. For over a century, the Vatican supposedly banned the public performance or transcription of Gregorio Allegri's haunting choral masterpiece, Missa Sacra Mei. It was said that anyone who attempted to reproduce this work outside the Sistine Chapel would face divine punishment. The reality? The so-called ban was more likely a method of preserving exclusivity rather than a true threat. Number 4. Paganini's Deal with the Devil. The myth. The virtuosic violin playing of the composer and pianist Niccolo Paganini was so extraordinary that it gave rise to rumors that he had made a pact with the devil in order to achieve his superhuman skills. Paganini's theatrical flair and gothically gaunt appearance only served to fuel these suspicions. Some even claimed to see the devil's figure accompanying Paganini during performances. The reality? Paganini's genius was likely a combination of talent, practice, and a possible medical condition, like Marfan syndrome, a genetic disorder that affects the body's connective tissue. Number 5. The Haunted Violin of Giuseppe Tartini. The myth? The Italian Baroque composer Giuseppe Tartini claimed that his famous Devil's Trill Sonata came to him in a dream where the devil played a violin at the foot of his bed. The haunting melody became one of the most challenging works in the violin repertoire. The reality? While Tartanini's tale may have been an embellishment, the music's eerie and virtuosic nature lends credence to the legend. Number 5. Lully's Tedium. The Lethal Tedium. This masterful choral work turned out to be the death of its composer, literally. The French composer Jean-Baptiste Lully served King Louis XIV, the Sun King, for more than 3 decades, His position as court composer appeared impregnable until Lully organized a special performance of his Te Deum to celebrate, and there are ironies here, the king's recent recovery from surgery. The performance was going smoothly until Lully stabbed himself in the foot with the pointed staff that he used to keep time with. He was advised by doctors to have the leg amputated. It seems that the prospect of never dancing again, though, was too much for the fleet-footed Lully, and he declined to be operated upon. Gangrene duly set in, and Lully died soon after. The would-be celebratory Te Deum has taken on a darker aura ever since, and Lully's demise must be one of the most tragic composer deaths in the history of classical music. Number 7, Scriabin's doomed final masterpiece. The legend? Now, here's one where the piece's ambitions match its eventual destiny. The visionary Russian composer Alexander Scriabin conceived his hugely ambitious Mysterium as a week-long performance designed to bring about the end of the world. A medieval miracle play, Mysterium was to be a packed multi-sensory extravaganza of sound and visuals, complete with perfumes and pyrotechnics. And it would climax, or so Scriabin fervently believed, with the end of this human world as we know it, and the birth of a new, nobler human race. In a bittersweet irony, the piece was never completed due to the composer's untimely death. Scriabin himself believed in the transcendental power of music and sought to merge it with spiritual rituals. His death from an infection put a stop to what would undoubtedly have been one of history's most audacious compositions. Smokey Robinson's Cruisin' introduces our jazz, blues, and soul music news. Motown Records, founded on this day in 1959, broke racial barriers in pop music with its beloved hits. Berry Gordy's record label used the sound of young America to bring people together. This is published in Smithsonian Magazine on January the 12th, 2025, by Teresa Nowakowski. On January the 12th, 1959, Berry Gordy Jr. started Tamla Records with the help of an $800 loan from his family, starting a journey that would forever change the music industry. The following year, it merged into Motown Record Corporation. For Gordy, starting his own label was the product of a long lifetime love of music. When he returned from Army service in 1953, he opened a short-lived record store in Detroit. Later, to amuse himself on the Ford assembly line, Gordy would make up songs. Eventually found himself writing for singer Jackie Wilson and helping young singer William Smokey Robinson and his band, best known as The Miracles, sell records. The limited returns, one royalty check Gordy received is said to have been for only $3.19, are part of what motivated him to start Motown. Back in those days, especially if you were black, nobody was paying you what you should be paid, if they paid you at all. So Berry decided to start his own record company and gave us that outlet, Robinson told AARP magazine in 2018. In an industry dominated by just a handful of major labels, success was no small feat. The industry tended to market music by black artists, usually all lumped under the umbrella of rhythm and blues, solely to black audiences. Those R&B tunes often only reached a white audience if a white artist like Pat Boone or Elvis Presley decided to cover them. To succeed, Gordy needed to appeal to the majority black R&B market and the broader majority white pop audience. Indeed, an early analysis of Motown's success from Fortune magazine credits Gordy's financial success to his ability to attract talented black artists and recognize those tunes, lyrics, and audio effects that would appeal to black and white listeners alike. In addition to creating songs with mass appeal, Gordy focused on marketing to white audiences, including hiring white marketers to use their connections in the industry. Sometimes he avoided putting musicians on album covers so they wouldn't be immediately discounted because of their race. Motown's first album was Hi, We're the Miracles, released in 1961. The album included Shop Around, Motown's first single to sell more than a million copies. The label quickly hit its stride. Motown songs kept up with tunes by bands like The Beatles and The Rolling Stones, and earworms from groups like The Supremes helped Motown sell more 45s than any other company in the nation. By 1971, it had put out 110 Billboard Top 10 hits. The integration of Motown's acts into the upper echelons of the pop charts had a ripple effect, leading groups like the Supremes to be invited to play clubs with predominantly white audiences. Gordy was hesitant to let artists try to send a message with their music. "I never wanted Motown to be a mouthpiece for civil rights," he told Time magazine in 2020. Instead, he saw the label as an example of a successful black business and a force for integration through music. Still, Gordy and Motown took an active role in civil rights history by recording Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech, unknowingly creating an important archive of the now famous address. "I saw Motown much like the world King was fighting for. People of all races and religions working together harmoniously for a common goal," Gordy told Time. Gordy later sold the label, but its beginning and golden era left a profound mark on history. "Our music made you feel good, but we also had a message of equality," Martha Reeves of Motown's Martha and the Vandellas told NPR in 2011. "It's just the sound of young America."
Over time, I've been building my castle of love just for two, though you never knew you were my reason.
Nina Freelon's Overjoyed introduces our local music news. This is published in PBS.org on January the 11th, 2025. It's titled, A Celebration of North Carolina Musical Artists. PBS North Carolina is excited to announce its new original music series, Shaped by Sound, premiering Thursday, February 6th. The show, which spotlights North Carolina's thriving music scene, features artists from a broad range of genres, including indie rock, hip-hop, R&B, alt-country, jazz, bluegrass, and folk. Shaped by Sound will air on PBSNC, as well as stream on pbsnc.org, the free PBS app, and YouTube. Shaped by Sound's series premiere on February 6 features acclaimed singer-songwriter Iron and Wine, currently on tour, in support of his latest album, Light Verse. Additional artists this season include Grammy-nominated jazz vocalist Nina Freelon, who's playing in the background now, indie rocker Superchunk, and hip-hop prodigy Reuben Vincent. See the full lineup on pbsnc.org. Presented as 13 30-minute episodes, the series weaves a visually stunning live studio performance by an NC artist or band with an intimate conversation about their creative journey. The series will be accompanied by a longer-form video podcast, interview, and a host of digital extras. So, how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, which of the following, if any, is true about Groundhog's Day? Is it A, if the groundhog sees his shadow on February 2nd, winter is almost over? Is it B, February 2nd is a midway point between the solstices and the equinoxes? Is it C, Punxsutawney Phil's predictions have been over 50% accurate? Is it D, all of the above statements are true about Groundhog's Day? Or is it E, none of the above statements are true about Groundhog's Day? Correct answer. Well, of these particular options, only statement B is correct. It turns out that February 2nd, which is commonly referred to as Groundhog's Day, is also a quote-unquote cross-quarter day on the celestial calendar, which means that it is a midway point between the solstices and the equinoxes. In addition, a January 31, 2021 VPM article notes that these cross-quarter days are associated with many familiar holidays where astronomical roots have largely been forgotten. The National Weather Service adds that the Groundhog Day tradition began as a Pennsylvania German custom in southeastern and central Pennsylvania in the 18th and 19th century, and has its origins in ancient European weather lore, wherein a badger or sacred bear is the prognosticator as opposed to a groundhog. A February 1, 2022 Library of Congress blog notes that the first mention found of groundhogs predicting the weather on February 2nd is in a diary entry for that day in 1840, written by a Welsh-American shopkeeper in Pennsylvania. Today, the Germans say the groundhog comes out of his winter quarters, and if he sees his shadow, he returns in and remains there 40 days. A 2021 wellness group adds that therapists love the movie Groundhog Day because the supernatural time loop serves as a perfect metaphor for how many patients experience and describe their real lives, trapped in routines of jobs and relationships that don't satisfy, passing the time perfunctorily but profoundly unhappy. According to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, Punxsutawney Phil has been right approximately 30% of the time in the past 10 years, while the Storm Facts Almanac calculated a 39% accuracy historically since 1886. Makes you wonder if an annual coin flip every year since that day in 1886 would have been more accurate than Phil's. But then we might have missed some great holidays, traditions, and films. And the answer to our second question, in which decade was the 45 RPM record first released, was at A, 1930s, B, 1940s, C, 1950s, or D, 1960s. Correct answer? Answer B. As noted in OnThisDay.com, the first 45 RPM record was released on this very day back in 1949. The 45 RPM record, a 7-inch vinyl record spinning at 45 revolutions per minute, was introduced by RCA Victor in 1949 as a competitor to the newly developed 33 and a third RPM long playing LP record, offering a smaller, more portable format primarily designed for single songs, and quickly became popular in the pop music scene, particularly during the 50s and 60s, due to its convenient size and vibrant colors. It was essentially the single record format of its time, replacing the older, larger 78 RPM records. The 45 RPM single, introduced by RCA Victor in 49, significantly changed the music landscape by enabling the widespread consumption of popular music, particularly rock and roll, by providing a smaller, more affordable format for single songs, allowing fans to easily purchase their favorite hits without having to buy an entire album, thus revolutionizing the music industry and propelling artists like Elvis Presley to stardom. Speaking of 45 RPMs, let's close out today's program with the very 45 RPM song that was banned in 1964, Louie Louie on This Day. A 2023 NPR article, by the way, notes that the judge at the banning trial said after hearing that song, "I'm going to deem it unintelligible at any speed," and lift the ban. The banning and controversy, of course, kept the song on the charts. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program's also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words: kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. Content of this program intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 68. For more information, please call 919-779-1755. So long. Until next time.